If you want jazz music, go to New Orleans. Bagels, New York. And for psychics, think California Psychics. You want the best, you go to the best. At California Psychics, home of free spirits and open minds, we know better than anyone what makes a good psychic. That's why we guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Woody Overton Window, the WOW for Monday, October 21st. It is episode 38. Good morning, Woody.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I got a sir. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I survived it. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well in Gulf Shores, Alabama for a Polygraph conference as we speak, or as they're listening to this, and all is well.
That's a good spot for a show. I like Gulf Shores.
Yeah, this is a pretty cool one. Like the American Polygraph Association is always in a different big city, and it's thousands of dollars just for the to get in the door and all that. So the Alabama Polygraph Association puts on one every year, and it's like it's almost free, man. And Saturday you have the hospitality room, and it's ball games all day long, and then Sunday this golf tournament and then a bowl, a shrimp bowl and a crab bowl and hospitality room. And then, every night is something different. And it's all for like $250, but I have to get during the daytime you have classes you have to go to for continuing education, which is every 2 years. So, but anyway,
what resort do they do that at?
This one's at the it's the Hilton at the what's the name of it? It's the I can't think of it. It's on the tip of my tongue, but it's the big Hilton property, and it's all condos facing the beach. But it's not named Hilton; it's something else. Anyway, and so, the chief of Gulf Shores is Jimmy Flanagan is the one that puts it on every year, and it gets all the old cops like me. That have done the big cities too many times, and this is a good beach trip basically. Now, it'd be a little bit cooler. Won't be sitting on the beach drinking margaritas, but
you might be.
I'm gonna be drinking something, but it's still a good time.
Well, I decided to, speaking of the beach, go for a bike ride along the beach here. And this is very stupid of me, but I hate wearing a helmet. I never wear a helmet. Mm-hmm. But most of the time when I was riding in New Orleans, I was riding in the park and there was didn't really need a helmet because there's no traffic. Out here, I'm riding along A1A and Route 1 and there's cars, but the bike lane's pretty big and sometimes it's off the road. So anyway, I haven't been riding with a helmet. Well, I had my first wipeout. I wouldn't call it a major. I didn't get hit by a car, but I was like an idiot trying to look at my phone while I was riding to just change the podcast I was listening to. I took my eye off of the road for maybe, you know, a second or two and didn't see a, not even a pothole, like a tiny little pothole that front tire hit, and whoops. And luckily I went off the, over the right side of the handlebars. So I landed on grass that was next to me with everything but my elbow. And so my elbow scraped on the gravel, but yeah. I took a few tumbles, but it was good. This is my explanation to my wife. It was good for me because now I know, because you don't know at 62 now, mm-hmm. I don't really know what I'm capable of and not capable of physically. Like if I wanted to get in a tackle football game, would it be, you know, one guy tackles me once and that's it. I, you know, break a couple of bones and I'm never moving again. I mean, I went flying over the handlebars. The instinct still kicked in where I did a tumble roll. So I tucked my head and made sure I landed on the, on that right shoulder and didn't break any bones or anything like that. So I'm thinking I still got a little bit left in me. I mean, not, I could play pickleball, you know, like that is, I'll be safe at.
I wish I had body camera footage of that would have gone viral.
There is no body cam footage. It's just, I did have a few young people pull over, one politely asking if I was okay. The next, which was a car full of young guys laughing at me, which was nice. I appreciated that.
It's just probably getting older. Like it's bow season now, and normally, you know, I would shoot my bow months ahead of time and stuff like that. Last year, I went to pull my bow back the first time, and I pulled all the muscles on my back. So I gave up my bow and got a crossbow.
That's not good. Yeah. That's not good. The first time you pulled it back,
right?
Well, time to face reality. Right. Well, speaking of reality, let's get back to reality and get back to our Nittany Lying series about the Penn State scandal. We are with episode 12, part 2 from the With the Benefit of Hindsight series, which is called The Settlements. And so we are going through the different settlement documents that these 36 accusers who were paid by Penn State filed. And last week we learned that Zig had formed a partnership with investigative journalist Ralph Cipriano to write a Newsweek cover story about the case, and that Ralph had been leaked the settlement documents by a member of the Penn State Board of Trustees. Zig and Ralph spent days poring over the documents, and Zig broke up the 28 new accusers. So remember, a trial, 10, but only 8 were actual people. So you had 8 accusers from then, and 28 new accusers makes for the 36 total that were paid. And Zig broke that group of 28 into 2 primary categories: the Lock Haven Five, which we talked about last week, and this week, the 1970s accusers. So it's the Lock Haven Five and the 1970s. Last week, we talked about the identities of 4 new accusers that followed in Aaron Fisher's footsteps, who were all from Lock Haven. All had attended Central Mountain High School, and all had connections of one sort or another back with Aaron Fisher. There was Frankie Probst, who was Frank the Tank. This was the big kid that played tight end that ended up playing 6 years of college football, who claimed he was abused by Sandusky all the way up until his 18th birthday when he was like 260 pounds. He filed just before his 30th birthday in 2016, and this was after he had denied like 14 times in an interview with Natalie Morales of NBC a few years earlier about being abused by Sandusky. Josh Culver was one of the others who filed the claim right after the Sandusky conviction in June of 2012. Culver's baby mama, Tennille Jones, reached out to Zig to tell John that Culver's story was bullshit and that he had gone without sleep for 3 days so that he could cry easily when he gave his story to the Penn State brass. She knew about his $5 million settlement, which had not been reported publicly, which extends some strong credibility to her stories. We heard about Glenn Neff, who made his claim in September of 2016. Again, a guy making a claim right before the statute of limitations ran out. We heard from his friend, Chad Buzkirk, about who got in touch with Zig after, again, Zig posts about Neff's settlement. Buzkirk was blown away by Sandusky's arrest. He had met Sandusky with Neff years earlier. Buzkirk was asked by asked Neff about reports about Sandusky, and Neff told him that everyone was lying, that there was no way that Sandusky could have done this. And then a few years later, Neff contacted Buzkirk, now claiming to be a victim of Sandusky, and asking Buzkirk to lie and tell his attorney that he witnessed Jerry Sandusky kissing Neff the day that they had gone to visit Sandusky. We also heard about Skylar Coover, who made a claim right after Josh Culver's. Coover's ex-stepfather and ex-stepbrother, Mike Zidek Sr. and Mike Zidek Jr., reached out to Zig, telling him that that they knew, that both of them knew that this was all bullshit, that they both said that Skylar and Josh told them that they had lied about Sandusky, and they offered Mike Sr. a bribe if he would support their story. Zig and Ralph also learned that both Victim 3 and Victim 5 have altered their stories tremendously in their settlement documents. In the case of Victim 5, Michael Kajak, he later testified at Graham Spanier's trial and went back to his original story that he had told at Sandusky's trial, which differed greatly from the settlement story. So these initial settlement documents do little to convince Zig that any of these accusers are telling the truth. In fact, it's just the opposite, as he's now certain that none of them are telling the truth. And then come these 1970s accusers. So throughout the evolution of this story, Scott Paterno and the Paterno family have made it difficult for Zig to really make any progress. But for a period of time, some momentum really starts to build toward, you know, resurrecting the reputation of Paterno. His wins are reinstated by the NCAA. The momentum on the ground is strongly in his favor. The board comes out and rejects the findings of the Free report. And so, you know, with the board rejecting the report that says there was a cover up, with the NCAA having to reinstate those wins, there's, you know, there's a strong tailwind toward putting the statue back up. Even discussions about naming the field at Beaver Stadium Paterno Field at Beaver Stadium. And then all of that comes to a screeching halt in May of 2016. And that's when a story breaks that, quote, court documents indicate that Joe Paterno knew about Sandusky's sexual allegations back in the 1970s. That one story got copied and pasted at lightning speed in every major media outlet, well, major and minor media outlet in the country, ran with this story that that Paterno was made aware of abuse by Sandusky of kids in the 1970s. The story itself was based on a judge who was involved in a case brought by the Penn State insurance company. So Penn State's insurance company was on the hook for, you know, $130 million plus in these settlements, and they were starting to get cranky and right, and knew that Penn State wasn't exactly doing diligence before writing these checks. And so the judge reveals that that some of the accusers say that Joe Paterno knew about the abuse all the way back in the 1970s. So all we know, all the public knows, is that a judge referenced this thing about Paterno knowing in the 1970s, and it goes viral because it was based upon, quote, court documents. The media once again runs with the story. People bought it hook, line, and sinker. Sandusky in the early 70s is an absolute nobody. He's a guy who played for Penn State, who had you know, a decent career at Penn State, got his way into the starting lineup through a lot of hard work, didn't have a ton of natural ability. He went the grad assistant route and eventually got a position on the staff permanently. But in the early 1970s, he's an assistant coach with small responsibilities. He's not somebody that Paterno would have looked to protect. He wasn't the defensive coordinator. He wasn't the co-head coach. He was one of many, many coaches on the team. And so the first story with any detail, of course, comes from Sarah Ganim. Sarah Ganim, the reporter who won the Pulitzer Prize for the story, who had been leaked continuously by the prosecution, different aspects of this case before the Free Report, before the presentment was made. Well, Ganim has moved up in her career as a result of winning that that Pulitzer Prize. And at this point in 2016, she is now at CNN. CNN hires her away from this little newspaper in central Pennsylvania. And she conducts an interview with one of the 70s accusers, a guy by the name of Randy Price. Well, she's at CNN, which is a cable network, which is video, is visual. Right. It's a visual network. And she's done an interview, but the interview is audio only. Mm. And then we come to find out that she had done the interview a year earlier. So this wasn't a new interview following the leak of these quote unquote court documents. This is an audio interview that's been in the can for over a year that CNN has never exposed either online or on their air. And so the original version that CNN posts lists the accuser as 62 years old, which would have made him 17 years old in 1971 when his story supposedly of the abuse takes place. CNN revises this year-old story and changes the date by 2 years to change the age of this accuser to 15 instead of 17. So the actual story, according to Ganim, is that in 1971, this guy was hitchhiking and he gets picked up by Sandusky, who immediately plies him with alcohol and pot and then brings him onto Penn State's campus where he brutally rapes him.
Always on campus, right?
Always on campus.
Yeah.
Now, this MO is completely different than anything we've ever heard of Sandusky doing with any other accuser. Right?
Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Mochi. Mochi is a telehealth platform that connects patients seeking medication-based weight loss treatment with board-certified doctors and dietitians to help them determine the best treatment options to accomplish that goal. Mochi's program is completely virtual, meaning you can access their services anywhere in the United States and you will be meeting with their team online. You deserve doctors that listen. Mochi is dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care that prioritizes overall well-being with the goal of transforming how weight management is approached. Mochi Health takes a holistic approach to weight loss that includes visit with board-certified doctors, nutrition consultations, and medications delivered to your door. Science-backed medications including GLP-1s like Ozempic and generic compound versions, affordable and accessible, regardless of insurance coverage. With Mochi, their dietitians work hand-in-hand with your medication to create personalized nutrition plans that fit your lifestyle. Reach your weight loss goals with science-backed, FDA-approved GLP-1 medications and support from real doctors and guidance from registered dietitians and help with making easy and sustainable changes to achieve results. Y'all have seen this. My wife has done it. My brother-in-law has done it. One of my best friends is doing it. And it really is an amazing process that works. So get started at joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off. That's joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off and let Mochi help change your life. Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Gobble. All Gobble meal kits are pre-prepped. That means less work for you and less waste in your kitchen. Their meal kits include everything you need so you can save time at the store or just skip that trip entirely. I got the box in and I had three different meals. I had a Kung Pao chicken, crispy fish tacos, and a beef bourguignon, however you say it. But let me tell you about the classic beef bourguignon. Look, it came with beef pot roast and a beef broth concentrate, red wine demi-glace, cremini mushrooms, cipollone onions, mashed potatoes, baby carrots, and rosemary thyme butter. It was so easy to make. Literally like 15 minutes it took Cindy. And let me tell you something, all the dishes were fire, but this thing was like a taste explosion in my mouth. It's just unreal. We've got to spend more time together and more time doing the things we love because everything came in this one single box right to my door. So see what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. You get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. And let me tell you, those cookies, I ate one that was sin-baked and it was delicious. Go to gobble.com/real life. That's gobble.com/real life for $120 off your first four boxes. This offer is not available on the home site, so don't miss out. This is genius. It's taste explosions in your mouth like you never had.
The common things we hear are the hand on the knee, the arm around them, the fatherly-like letters, etc. But no one, even victim one, victim four, victim five, people that claimed 100-plus encounters with Sandusky, ever said that he plied them with alcohol or marijuana. It was, you know, tickets to ball games, remember? Right. So this guy's story, now this is the 1970s, so maybe, I guess, in his early days of abusing kids, it was alcohol and marijuana, even though Sandusky never smoked a cigarette, never taken a drink, and never smoked marijuana in his life. But anyway, this kid supposedly tells his dad, who sets up a call, supposedly, with the Penn State athletic director at the time, not Tim Curley, the prior athletic director, and Joe Paterno. Zig makes a big deal of the fact that in the story, it's a conference call. I don't know. It could have been done over an intercom or something. Yeah. And so it is possible to have done a conference call in 1971. But what I find more impossible to believe is that Paterno would have jumped on any kind of call like this with or without the athletic director. And Paterno's MO through anything and everything was to, you know, bring any kind of complaint immediately to his superiors. Right. But this is the story, and this is the story that then gets released by CNN, by Sarah Ganim, a year after it was recorded with this guy. This guy's name is Randy Tice. So Zig is able to figure out, the story is posted as anonymously, but Zig is able to go through the settlement documents and find this story, which is from a guy by the name of Randy Tice. The settlement document claims that Tice fought back against Sandusky and pounded him in the face, knocking out several of Sandusky's teeth. Mm-hmm. Zig checks in with Franco Harris, who was on the team at the time of this claim, 1971. And Franco has no knowledge of it. Franco asks a couple of other buddies who are on the team. Nobody has any recollection of, at any point in time, Sandusky getting beat up and having his teeth knocked out. And it's interesting that this is a big part of the settlement document, but it's not in the CNN story and not mentioned in these other quote unquote court documents. Well, Tice himself is a big Pittsburgh Steeler fan, and he uses the settlement money to purchase a Pittsburgh Steeler themed Corvette. And this car is something. I mean, it is a Pittsburgh Steeler themed Corvette. He also posts a picture of a lithograph of his hero, who was many in Pennsylvania's hero at the time, Steelers linebacker Jack Lambert. Remember Jack Lambert?
Yeah.
And what was sort of the telltale trait of Jack Lambert?
No teeth. Yeah.
Lambert had no front teeth. He had this big gap in the front of his mouth. And so none of this stuff about Lambert or the Steeler themed Corvette, which is really a Lambert themed Corvette because it had the number 58 on it. And so here's this guy who's supposedly abused in 1971 by Sandusky, who then supposedly makes the complaint to the athletic director and to Paterno directly on this quote unquote conference call. And he does get a settlement. We'll talk about that in a second, but he goes on to attend Penn State games for years. He goes on to send his daughter to Penn State. The daughter posts on her Facebook page when Paterno dies that she quote, can't believe it. He was a hero of mine. So the guy who supposedly told her father to pound sand when he came forward with a complaint about Sandusky abusing him is one of her heroes. Tice was represented by that same Penn State ambulance chaser, Andrew Shubin. He allegedly had a corroborating witness, which would make his story much more powerful, right? His corroborating witness is a guy by the name of Bernard McHugh. McHugh is one of the, if you've seen the quote unquote documentary Happy Valley about this story, he's actually in that film. He's one of the crackpots in that film that is camped out. He's actually living at the Paterno statue during the film, screaming at people for ever supporting Joe Paterno and saying that the statue needs to be torn down. And I don't know how long he stays at the statue's location, but it's a long time. Tice claims to be friends with McHugh, which is possible, but McHugh is 17 years older than Tice. So if Tice was 15 from CNN's story, and McHugh is 34, it's 19 years older, and we're supposed to take it that these guys are friends.
Right.
McHugh tweets in April of 2016, which is after Tice made his claim. Tice's claim was in 2013. McHugh tweets in 2016 that he has a degree from Penn State, that he taught at Penn State, that he had tremendous respect for Joe Paterno until the story came out in 2011 about Mike McQuarrie witnessing Sandusky in the Penn State showers with a boy. Now, this is a tweet from a guy that supposedly corroborated a story from 1971 from Randy Tice.
Yeah.
Okay, so the entire story is a joke, but Zig gets into sort of what's behind what's going on here. And he starts hearing from different people about McHugh. And it turns out that multiple people claim that McHugh went nuts about the story, and he became an ardent zealot because the story hit so close to home. McHugh apparently used to host beer parties for teenage boys and used to ply them with alcohol and pot. Of all the people, it was Scott Paterno who wrote, quote, "We were preparing to sue Bernie McHugh for slander. We found evidence of McHugh having issues, including abuse of that accuser, Randy Tice, from 1971. So the idea of McHugh being the corroborating witness in a story that destroyed the possibility of resurrecting Paterno's reputation, it all was just, the timing of it all was just incredibly strange because of how close this group that Franco Harris was involved in, that Ziegler was involved in, that former board of trustees were involved in, was to, you know, rehabilitating Paterno's reputation. Tice got paid $200,000, which is basically an insult. I mean, it's basically saying, we don't believe you, but here's money to go away, right?
Right.
That's the Tice story. Then there's this other guy, Michael Quinn, and he's the second of the 70s accusers. His claim was that in 1976, he was abused by Sandusky and that he approached Paterno in a public setting to tell him that he was abused by Sandusky and that Paterno told him to, quote, get away from me, kid. I've got a football team to coach. That's right. In that quote is in his settlement document. It's hard to discredit a story like this because, like so many others, it's just one person's word, except that the attorney that Quinn eventually uses, which is a guy by the name of Michael Bonney, Bonney has told the press prior to his representation of Quinn that prior to the leak of the story, but after his representation of Quinn, that he's unaware of any evidence that that there was any truth to any stories of abuse from the 1970s, that you need more than anecdotal or speculative evidence. He's saying publicly that he's not seen any evidence of anything from the 1970s. So in the next few years after the 76 complaint, Paterno decides to promote Sandusky to defensive coordinator and to support his charity, which he launches in 1979. And so if the story from 71 and or the story from 76 had any truth to him, how much sense does it make that Paterno would have retained Sandusky, who was a nobody on his staff, would have later promoted him to defensive coordinator and then supported Sandusky starting the Second Mile charity in 1979. Sure. And, yeah, I think you'd agree that that doesn't make any sense. That
none of it does. And if it, you know, if they had investigated, even if it had been prescribed, they couldn't use it. They would use these people in trial and all this all bullshit. And I still don't think Paterno ever knew anything about anything.
Right. Well, they did come out. These people did come out after the trial. So, don't know whether the prosecutors would have ever used their stories in the trial or not, but we know from the settlements that they get, which are outliers. I mean, they're way out of market compared to what anybody else gets. Now they are outside of the statute of limitations, but they do wheel Paterno into their stories to try and get at some serious money. Ziegler, who is an ardent anti-conspiracy theory guy, says that this is the one piece of this case that he actually believes was conspiratorial, because the unveiling of the 70 stories and the timing of the unveiling of the 70 stories, the leak of the 70 stories, is in perfect timing to stop the resurrection of Paterno, to stop the group from really getting his statue back, to getting the naming of the stadium, to completely cleaning his record of any sort of cover-up in the Sandusky case. The HBO docudrama called Paterno that stars Al Pacino has a final scene in that movie where Sarah Ganim is a consultant, and Ganim gets a phone call ominously from someone who's supposed to be the 1976 accuser. And ironically, Ganim had no involvement at all with the 76 accuser. She wrote the story. She did the interview with the 71 accuser, just showing just how far out of it all of these people doing this ancillary coverage and producing these other things was. A big part of this episode includes clips from interviews with both Al Lord and Bob Capretto, two former members of the Board of Trustees at the time of these decisions. And Capretto says, you know, I blame the kids and I really blame their attorneys. Penn State chose a path and really needed these guys to be guilty. They laid down for Mike McQueary. Capretto said, quote, all I know is very few people were involved. The deals were all made with the lawyers. They just made the settlements. The ones from the 1970s, they even settled with them. That he asked Ira Lubert, who we'll get into in a minute, why did you settle with these 70s accusers? And Lubert said, quote, I just wanted to get rid of them. Lubert was part of that group with John Surma and the former Governor Corbett that wanted first Graham Spanier and secondarily Joe Paterno fired back in 2011. And Lubert is a very rich guy, and he's a huge supporter of Penn State wrestling. And the Penn State wrestling program has become, I mean, bigger than Iowa, Oklahoma. It's the number one wrestling program in the country now, largely due to Lubert's support of that program. And there's a rivalry of sorts there, and there's everything going back to the 2011 period with Corbett and with Surma. And so this thing becomes public in a highly suspicious way. These court documents are leaked, but there's hundreds of pages to these court documents that are leaked. And there's only one small reference deep into the 300 or so pages of these documents that references this judge who mentions that the 1970s cases that were settled claimed that Paterno knew of abuse in the 70s. So the other members of the Board of Trustees become furious that this story has been leaked to the press. And the chief counsel at the time says to them, hey, we all know that Spanier didn't know anything about Sandusky. You know, this is unfortunate, blah, 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 blah. And Zig asks both Lord and Capretto, you know, why are they so sure that this was all a setup? Lord says sentiment was turning, that at that point they needed to, quote, re-nail Joe. They needed to make sure that Paterno's reputation could not be resurrected. The attorney on the other side of this thing and Lubert are best buddies, that Lubert is in a position to get anything done he wants to get done in the city of Philadelphia. That's all quotes from Al Lord. He has intimate relationships with the Philly law firms involved. Lubert was chairman of the Board of Trustees at the time of these leaks in 2016, and he is the one that from day one determined the extent of the questioning of the so-called victims. He's the one who signed every one of these settlements. He's also the guy who claimed that he, quote unquote, fired Spanier and Paterno. He told the pro-Paterno Board of Trustee members. So Lubert, in discussions with the board, told the pro-Paterno portion of the board, which had built up to well over half of the board, that, quote, you guys support my decisions, and I'll see to it that Paterno gets his reputation back. So the quid pro quo was that all these guys were going to stand down, not challenge any of these settlement checks that he was writing. And in return, he was going to make sure that the public knew the truth about Paterno. Well, that's not exactly what happened. So the court documents do get leaked, and the 1970s guys claim that they spoke directly with Paterno. And this was all in an effort to nail Paterno, according to both Al Lord and Bob Capretto. And when asked by Ziegler how many members of the Board of Trustees believe that Sandusky is innocent. This is back in 2016. Capretto says that about 10 of the 40 are certain that Sandusky is innocent. So you get 25% of the Board of Trustees, mostly members who voted to terminate Paterno and Spanier, now believing that Sandusky is innocent. Like I said, there were hundreds of pages that were leaked. And so, you know, Zig can't help but wonder how a very lazy press who never reads 300 pages found the page 188 or wherever it was, where this fleeting reference is made by a judge, and a judge in a case that wasn't really even related. This was, again, in the insurance case. And so the 1970s guys needed something special in order to get the attention of the board, because they were outside the statute of limitations. Weaving Paterno into their stories was the way. The accusers knew that Penn State wanted Paterno implications and that they would pay for them. There's an interview that's done by A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon, Ziegler refers to as our purposely fake accuser. The next episode in the series we call Secret Agent Man. It's the story of A.J. Dillon and how he infiltrated this maze of lawyers and therapists to sort of show how the sausage was getting made in this case. But Dillon is able to get an interview with Ira Lubert, and the interview is under the auspices that he's going to interview him about his beloved wrestling program, which he does. But in the course of that interview, he asks him questions about the settlements, and the audio is not terrific, but it's clear that that during the course of that interview, Lubert says a number of things that are greatly concerning if you believe Sandusky is guilty. He says that the administrators are, quote, great men that made a mistake. He considers the possibility of Sandusky's innocent, but in his mind, he can't conceive of why Curley and Schultz would have pleaded guilty when they didn't, if they didn't participate in a cover-up, and why Paterno would say, I wish I had done more. Well, Paterno didn't just say, I wish I had done more. He said, with the benefit of hindsight, I wish that I had done more, not indicating that he knew anything or that there was any kind of a cover-up.
Hey, y'all, you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with the subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to become curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. Look, we homeschool our son. No doubt about it. He's more of a visual learner, and we use IXL, and Cindy teaches him, and there are so many different benefits to the program. It adapts to exactly what he needs in different areas. So IXL is the perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum. IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational games, lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving. Everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead like our son, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. Kids love IXL's positive feedback awards and educational games. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. And don't forget, Real Life Real Crime listeners get 20% off. Y'all, we really do use this product, and it's been a godsend.
If you want jazz music, go to New Orleans. Bagels, New York. And for psychics, think California Psychics. You want the best, you go to the best. At California Psychics, home of free spirits and open minds, we know better than anyone what makes a good psychic. That's why we guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. Visit CaliforniaPsychics.com and experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
36 people got paid. Lubert said that there were accusers who exaggerated. He can't understand, again, how this could happen to these five people. He says that some of these accusers were not victims. Some of them were, quote unquote, on the gravy train. Some of them exaggerated their stories for money. They're not all victims. Some were on the gravy train, but there were some victims. There were some we settled for $100,000 just to get them to go away. But believe me when I tell you, quote, there was some bad stuff going on. Capretto said about Lubert that the lawyers were probably telling him just to pay people and make this whole thing go away. Interesting that none of these accusers, ever went after Sandusky in a civil case. And you could say, well, they knew that Sandusky wasn't rich and there wasn't a lot of money to get there, but he had some money. And nobody ever went after him for a dime. Lubert never came back with specifics on a single victim. His story was just that this couldn't have happened to five guys. There were 36 accusers who came forward. They can't all have been lying. And this is where, again, we get back to the, well, if you had to say that there was one accuser whose story you absolutely believe, which one would it be? Who is it of these 36 that you're absolutely positive is telling the truth? And then let's look at that story, because we've looked at all 36 and every single one of them have significant problems with their stories. The tidbit sort of sidebar, but I think it's very telling. The University of Tennessee during this time period was recruiting for a new coach, and they hired a guy by the name of Greg Schiano, whose name you might mention. He's been around college football for years. He was a former assistant on the Penn State staff. And after they offered him the job, they revoked the job after a story comes out that Mike McQueary said in a deposition in a civil case that Tom Bradley, who was a former defensive coordinator at Penn State and a friend of McQueary's, supposedly told McQueary that Greg Schiano had told Bradley that Schiano saw Sandusky abusing a boy. The media runs with that story. Tennessee bails on the Schiano hiring, even though both Bradley and Schiano come out and vehemently deny the story. So Bradley comes out denying that there's any truth to it or that he ever said any such thing to McQueary. And obviously, Schiano does the same thing. Well, you know, the world of college football is a pretty small fraternity. People all know each other, and you know, your reputation follows you everywhere. And Schiano gets hired. Schiano gets hired by Urban Meyer at Penn State at the time. Urban Meyer was probably at that point recognized as the number two coach in the country behind only Nick Saban at Alabama. This guy goes and hires Shanahan, and Shanahan's career has continued to grow and is a head coach somewhere, maybe Rutgers right now. I'm trying to remember where he is. Interesting that Mike McQuarrie has never gotten another college coaching job after he left Penn State. And that's because everyone in college football knows the truth and knows that the guy's full of shit. And they also know that the Shiano story was bullshit. And that's why his reputation continues to be positive and he continues to be able to get jobs. I mentioned this in an early episode, but I'll mention it again. Sandusky's adopted son, John, is one of the most respected scouts in the NFL. It's not just amongst coaches in the college ranks that people know the story at Penn State is bullshit. It's understood within the coaching community overall. You couldn't possibly, as the son of Jerry Sandusky, get a major job as a pro football scout using the name, your real name, your adopted name, John Sandusky, without people knowing. And so, you know, what happens in this episode is it becomes clear that those sort of original members of the board back from 2011 and Ira Lubert as the controller of the purse strings wants to keep Paterno from being resurrected. They pay the claims from Tice and Quinn, even though they are ridiculous. They make sure that the story gets leaked. They point the media toward the pages in, or the page in the 300 plus pages that were leaked, where the judge makes that statement, and all of a sudden it's a national story everywhere, giving credit to the story of these two accusers, and in effect, the 1970s cases slam the door shut forever on resurrecting Joe Paterno's reputation.
Yeah, because the average person, you know, hears them settling with the guys from the 1970s, and they're thinking, oh, well, shit, you know, he must have done it, or why are they paying him money, right? And then knocking his teeth out and marijuana. You know, if I was a con artist guy myself living, if I'd ever even passed by Jerry Sandusky, I would have made up some shit and gone to one of these attorneys. But and said that Paterno knew, right? Not, you know, the courtroom shit we're talking about. And I agree, it's a perfect storm on all the shit that happens afterwards and happens right when they're going to bring him, you know, his name back and all that. But the story remains untold, I guess, until y'all did it. But I mean, how many people have listened to it all? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. We did pretty well. Now, I produced the podcast series because, number one, I respected and loved John's work, that because we were in Los Angeles together at the same time. I believed in him and I believed in the story, but I also believed, as a capitalist, that there would be interest to tell this story in documentary form once we got the truth out there. And, you know, the total downloads of the series are in the millions, not quite to 10 million, but like 7 or 8 million. So, and we definitely put a serious dent in what people believe in central Pennsylvania. I mean, the listening to the story heavily came from the state of Pennsylvania, and the two prominent sports talk shows in that market that cover Penn State embrace with the benefit of hindsight as the true story. They do not recognize Sandusky as a pedophile. And Ziegler, even I've gone on and done interviews with these guys. And so public opinion has been affected, I'd say, to a fairly significant degree in that specific area, but nowhere else in the country other than that area. It would take a studio getting behind us and agreeing to do documentary. But we look at how many ridiculous Menendez documentaries have been out there, right?
Right.
And you look at the unbelievable circumstances of this story. 36 people getting paid, the amount of corruption, the attorneys, the therapists, the former governor, all of these people, and a judge, all of these people involved in this thing, and all the twists and turns. It's almost unbelievable that there's this much. Zig used to call it the greatest story never told, and it is, because people were so influenced by the media's version of this thing that they cast away any other version of anything as a joke, because it has to be true. There were 36 victims, but
yeah, it'll take him winning something on appeal for it to come back in. And then, modern day, even though it was what, 4-8 years ago, this last part, but it'll take something on appeal for him to win, for it to come out like Scott Peterson got his, one piece of duct tape to get taped in the LA Innocence Project, takes him up and all that shit 20 years later. And now, it's the hot shit again. And now everybody's doing the deep dig and finding all the stuff. And that's what it's going to take on this case to exonerate Paterno and them. So
I think momentum is starting to come back into the market for stories like this. The two that we're talking about with, Menendez and Peterson, even though all those people are guilty, they're still people are still investing millions to tell different versions of those stories.
Right.
Here's one where stories have been told, the HBO Paterno story and the Happy Valley documentary, but horribly told and not even close to the kind of research that went into to this podcast and Ziegler's overall work. And next week, we're going to get the behind the scenes from AJ Dillon, who comes forward as a former Second Mile member to Ziegler, tells Ziegler, I don't believe any of this stuff. And I've been reading your stuff and watching your stuff. And I'm going to approach Andrew Shubin, the attorney, as a victim. And I'm going to see just how much I can uncover about how this whole game gets played. And that's what we'll see next week. What happens when you come forward as a fake accuser, but you have the critical piece of being a former Second Miler. So, that's sort of your validation. You attended the Second Mile. That can be proven. Once they know you're a former Second Miler, it's like the blue check on Twitter. Okay. That means you're credible, and you can get paid by Penn State. And so I'm going to take your case if I'm Andrew Shubin, because I'm seeing dollar signs. Now tell me your story, and we'll take it from there next week with AJ Dillon.
Sounds like a plan. Be interesting to hear it for sure. But there's lawyers by them, 36 people in. It's cut and paste for them, and they know that they were writing the checks and all that. And unfortunately, it does bring out the bad people, and the lawyers are getting minimum 33 1/3, probably 40% of everything, and it's just another check. They don't give a fuck.
So no, they don't. And Lubert is, even though this is happening in State College and the guys on the line from a lawyer standpoint are people like Andrew Shubin, the cases are getting fed to major Philadelphia law firms to work out the actual settlement.
For sure.
A big cut. But it's Lubert who is filling the pockets of his own friends.
Right. I see what you're saying. And he knows the lawyers in the Philly law firms. Yeah.
Yeah. This Casey law firm in Philly is the brother of the senator from the state of Pennsylvania now. And he's the one negotiating the payments for all of those Shubin victims, of which I believe there were nine paid. So it's big money.
I'm sure Luber gets nice Christmas baskets every year from all the different law firms that he settled with, right? And I don't know.
Yes, he does. Well, we'll be back next week with A.J. Dillon and the story of our secret agent man who infiltrates this whole scam.
Good deal.
Stay tuned for that.
Good
deal.
Thanks,
Wood. Have a good week, bud.
You too. Have a good weekend. Peace, y'all.
Aglets.
Do you feel like you're going through life clouded by doubt? Talk to California Psychics. Our trusted and accurate psychics are available 24/7, and we guarantee if it's not life-changing, it's free. Download the app or connect with us at californiapsychics.com. Right now, new customers get 80% off their first reading. Experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.